Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
There are other scientific systems that do not comply with the Western scientific method. We need an inter-scientific dialogue happening between modern culture, the modern civilization, and our ancestral mature culture. They will gain enormously if they do that. But they have to abandon arrogance, and they have to abandon fear to do that. And that those teachings, they are in the teachings I mentioned previously from the Anishinaabe people. You have to be humble and you have to be courageous, which are the contrary of fear and arrogance.
That's the voice of Elder and University of Ottawa Professor Marcelo Saavedra. On this week's show, we speak to Marcelo in the second part of a three-part series called Regenerative Ways of Being. So stay tuned.
We are speaking with Dr. Marcelo Saavedra. He is a professor of Indigenous Studies at the University of Ottawa. He's also an Aymara elder, and we reached him in Ottawa. I would like us to focus on the life-giving practices that were given to us by our ancestors. There are many ways the wisdom of our elders have already instructed a path for us to follow. For many indigenous people, whether it's the Anishinaabe, the Maya, the Aymara people, there's a set of instructions of wisdoms that we are called to practice in order to live a good life, a life that is in symbiotic reciprocity with the world. Can we talk a little bit about how do we cultivate, how do we reconnect to those roots?
Yeah. Here on Turtle Island, we are quite fortunate to have about 55 nations here in Canada. And that we have the wealth of wisdom of these 55 nations. Unfortunately, a number of them have disappeared, have gone extinct. Many of their languages have been eliminated. But we still have some important communities that belong to the Anishinaabe people, to Cree communities, to the Inuit Nation, to Mi'kmaq, and so on. We still have some sort of wealth in the wisdom of these nations. And they are close to us, you know. And every nation has a set of teaching that and something that is common among all indigenous nations, that one of the fundamental teachings they have and by which they abide all the time is sharing. In my language, we say is hisanya. So sharing is the most important thing, because the hand that will always be full with things, with food, is the hand that is offering this food to others. So that's why we share. And if you approach an elder, they will share with you whatever you want to be shared. And I'll give you an example. I live here on Anishinaabe territory. And the teachings that we abide by, they come from the Anishinaabe nation. And we call them the teachings of the seven grandfathers. And these are Nibwak Kawin, which means wisdom. And by the way, from enunciating only one of these teachings, you can derive the other six of them, because they are related to each other. You have to have the predisposition of one of them if you are going to be open to the rest, and you'll see. The other teaching is Sagittivin, which means love. And again, these teachings, they are like reciprocal. So if you are loved, it's because you love. So, you know, you receive and you give. Then there is Minadenda Mowin, which means respect, which is implied by love and by wisdom. Then there is bravery, which in Algonquian we said Akodewin. Then there is honesty, which is Guayak Guadeuswin. Then there is Dabadensiwin, which is humility. And the last one, which actually encompasses the other six teachings, is Dewewin, which means truth or truthfulness. So when you have attained the state in which you are being truthful by living these teachings, they have become part of who you are, then you are being truthful to yourself, first of all, to the community, to your ancestors, to your future generations, and to the Creator. So, you know, for instance, in my courses, because this is the protocol, I have to teach this to my students. And this is what I share with them, because this is Algonquin land, and they have to live by the teachings of the land. These teachings, they come right from the land, you know. And it is the elders that were able to read these teachings in the many hundreds or thousands of years that they have been interacting with the land. In my culture, we have other sets of teachings, you know, expressed differently in other languages and using other symbols and metaphors. But basically, they're all about this. It's been like respectful, it's been humble, it's been truthful, wise, and all the things that I mentioned before. So if you need to approach to the wisdom of this mature culture, you just, you know, you go about and find an elder, and I can assure you that this elder is going to be happy to be sharing this with you. Because that's the spirit that moves us, sharing.
For many cultures, mature cultures, indigenous cultures, the idea that men and women have unique gifts that balance each other, that together contribute, you know, for the Taoist, the Yang and Yin, you know, are a relationship. Can we talk about the relationships that we must co-create in order to create a world and to be in co-creation of the worlds that we coexist within?
In my culture, we have this this pair, which is the fundamental parity for us, which is the Chachawarmi, man woman, not man and woman, but man, woman, just like one word. It's like a complementary opposing forces. They imply each other. It's like the, you mentioned the yin yang. If you imagine the yin yang, the yin, which is the black half of the symbol, has a white dot in the center. That's because the feminine part, the black part, implies the other part, the white part. That's why it has that white dot. So from that white dot, you can actually recreate the yang, the masculine part. And it's the same thing with man and woman. You can imply the other by looking at one of them, you know. And this is not an excluding exercise. You know, I have received this question many times in my courses from my students. How do we deal with people that have a different identity, not in terms of a gender, that although they are, let's say, there's a female, they have the personality or the identity of a male. So for us, we don't discriminate against people that have other gender, not the one that shows their body, and we call them two-spirited people, you know. And actually for us, they are special because they have two spirits. They have the male and the female spirit in one person. So we don't discriminate against them. We believe that they are quite special persons, very gifted by Mother Earth. So, and in our belief of living and coexisting well, it is important that we have the pair carrying this out. They have to execute the social project of having a community. It is crucial that they are together in equilibrium, the walking through this path. Like, for instance, in my country, half of the legislators in the legislative power, they are women. Half of the ministers are women. And this is not because of feminist theory or affirmative action. No, this comes from our ancestral beliefs. After we have acknowledged that our ancestors were quite wise in their beliefs, then we managed to recuperate the notion of chachawarmi, which puts the woman in equilibrium with men and vice versa. So that's why we have like the two fundamental halves distributed equally in my country.
We cannot talk about co-creation without talking about the dystopian systems that co-create us in competition with each other. And when we think about capitalism, you and I had a conversation in the past where you describe it as this zombie, you know, this undead. It not only is corrosive in the way that it defines us in terms of monetizing life as a way of giving value, how should we understand our ways of creating not just societies, but the way that we understand these economies, you know, of understanding our sharing, because that's, you know, we are told it's inevitable that we're going to create a system, an economic system of some sort, to trade and share our talents, our gifts.
According to the beliefs we have, as Aymara people, as Quechua people, as Amazonian peoples, we are living through an age of what we call the Pachacuti, which translates into a cosmic upheaval. Things are being turned upside down. And we can see that clearly with the economic sphere, the financial sphere. Like in the, you know, when capitalism was just starting, you know, some decades before the Industrial Revolution, the markets were part of a community. A community had developed markets so they could meet there and they could exchange or barter products. So that was the function of the market, but it was a socially controlled entity, the market. Nowadays, it's upside down. The market controls society. Everything has to go by the market, to acquire value. And everything is being turned into commodities so they can be put into use. So the market has become like the central organism, or I should say machine, through which things have to go in order to become useful to society. And society doesn't have any control over the market. You know, we depend on the indices of the market to have like a decent life in this sort of system. And even worse, after the Second World War, they tried to reform the financial system. They created the Iron Triangle, that the Iron Triangle is the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Trade Organization. At the time it was called GATT, the GATT, that eventually became the World Trade Organization. Well, we call them the Iron Triangle. And eventually they managed to separate the financial sphere from its economic temple. And the finances, they started to have a life of their own, and they started to create recessions everywhere. Like nowadays, we're in a profound recession that has begun like about in the year 2003, and there was another crisis in 2008, and we're still in the same crisis. It's not a different one. It's the same crisis that is just undulating, and eventually it's going to burst, and it's going to provoke all kinds of social suffering, economic injustices, and it's going to also try to reactivate itself by going again to other wars, because that's how the system keeps on going, by going to war and to by creating more places which war happens, and the social consequences. You can see that, you know, there's, I mean, a crisis of refugees that has never been like this since the Second World War. And it's going to get worse, because on top of that, we're going to have the climate change of refugees. So all these crises are being expressed in the other crises that are going to fire all the disarray and the suffering of people around the planet. And especially among them, it's indigenous people. You know, they are the first ones to suffer, because they are so close to the land that they really suffer when an environment is tampered with.
Among indigenous people, you know, we hear elders telling us about tracking, you know, how we track and become intimate with our path, with the path to live in awareness of the sacred. How do we find our way back in order to create this concentric circles, you know, meaning wholeness in our relationships?
In indigenous cultures, we have what we term a vision quest. So we try to have our younger generations go through fasting and vision quest at a relatively young age, so they can know, so they are aware of who they are and where they need to go. And many who have done this vision quest at an early stage, they become elders at a young age too. Like, for instance, I work with Elder Jacob Obati, who you know, he has become an elder when he was about 27 years old. He was young, but he became an elder because he became so aware of who he was and what his journey was, you know. And although not all of us can do a vision quest because we lack the guides and the mentors to do so, there are some other tools that come from other traditions that are quite useful. For instance, in the Buddhist tradition, you know, we contemplate silence, because in silence we are going to find many answers and many questions as well. Even in the Christian tradition, we have to pray from the bottom of our hearts. The Muslim tradition, the same thing, you know. We have references to be good people, to comply with the precepts that have been left for us to live by our ancestors, including our prophets. And in many other traditions, like most of the cultures that populate the planet, they have their own religious traditions. So we have to get close to that, because, like, according to our beliefs, the circle of life implies that all voices have to be heard. And there are so many voices on our planet. We just have to become humble, to open our heart, and to listen attentively and with full intention. And that's how we will awaken from this long nightmare of patriarchy, colonialism, and capitalism.
You know, among some of the gifts that I think are most generative are the gift of compassion, the gift of, you know, generous listening, and empathy, you know, not just for ourselves and for where we are. Can we maybe talk about the way then that we heal our own sense of brokenness? I think a lot of the times the things that prevent us from having a path of wholeness is our own insecurities that we have cultivated of being unworthy, of being imperfect, of being broken somehow.
One of the things that Europeans brought to our land, and that unfortunately we live by it in modern times, actually this thing is composed of two elements, fear and arrogance. Fear is embedded in the system, like, for instance, in economics, one of the first things that you learn in economics 101 is that resources on our planet are scarce. So scarcity is something that you are taught from the onset. And economics is the science of scarcity. But scarcity causes you fear, because you are afraid that eventually we are going to run out of things. And because we have that fear so ingrained in ourselves for hundreds of years now, it's happening. And the other thing is arrogance, that we have developed this sense of entitlement over everything. You know, we go to a parcel of land, and we believe that it belongs to us. So we go there and we clean it up, like, down, as I said before, down to bacterial level. And we build houses, we build malls, we develop it, as we call it. So that's arrogance. And arrogance also is shown in the way the Western mentality has been imposed onto everyone on the planet. And we believe that the Western mode of validating knowledge is the only way possible. And we have forgotten to see, and we have failed to see, that there are other scientific systems that do not comply with the Western scientific method. We need an inter-scientific dialogue happening between modern culture, the modern civilization, and our ancestral mature cultures. They will gain enormously if they do that. But they have to abandon arrogance, and they have to abandon fear to do that. And that those teachings, they are in the teachings I mentioned previously from the Anishinaabe people. You have to be humble and you have to be courageous, which are the contrary of fear and arrogance.
That was Marcelo Saavedra, and join us next week for the last part of our three-part series. I'm going to finish the show with a song by David Rovix, "We Are Everywhere." Bye for now.
We should have food. I speak for many when I say no one should have seven homes. While some don't have any, though I may find myself stranded in some strange place with naught but a vapid stare, I remember the world that I know. We are everywhere. I say the time for the rich, it will come. Let me count the ways. Victories are hints of the future. Havana, Caracas, Chiapas, Buenos Aires. How many people are wanting and waiting and fighting for their share? They hide in their ivory towers, but we are everywhere. Religions and prisons and races, borders and nations, FBI agents and congressmen and corporate radio stations. They try to keep us apart, but we find each other, and the rulers are always aware that they're a tiny minority, and we are everywhere. With every bomb that they drop, every home they destroy, every land they invade, comes a new generation from under the rubble saying, we are not afraid. They will pretend we are few, but with each child that a billion mothers bear, comes the next demonstration that we are everywhere.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.